What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Debbie Riddle is a graphic designer, mother, wife, survivor of stalking, and co-victim of murder from Ohio. In these two episodes, Debbie shares about her role as big sister to Peggy, a shining light of the Klinke family. In 1998, as Peggy turned to higher academia to empower herself post-divorce, she met a man that would change her trajectory forever. What would ensue is a controlling, harmful relationship that Peggy eventually freed herself from. However, her ex-boyfriend began viciously and relentlessly stalking Peggy, her family members, and Peggy's new boyfriend, Mark. Then, on January 18, 2003, the stalking would end tragically. Since Peggy's murder, Debbie has turned her pain into purpose and become a world-renowned speaker on stalking awareness, even helping establish national awareness events through legislation. The Broken Cycle Media team is deeply indebted to Debbie for her energy, warmth, advocacy, and deep desire to make the world a safer place. This episode is in loving memory of Peggy Klinke.
Patrick called my brother and said, I want to wish you nothing but the best for your wedding day. While we are all in Florida for my brother's wedding, Patrick flies to Youngstown, Ohio, drives to my mother's house, and spray paints PK is a whore on my mother's garage door. Patrick goes back to Albuquerque, opens up a gas line in Mark's backyard, and sets Mark's house on fire. Mind you, we are all in Florida. Peggy and Mark got on a plane, flew back to Albuquerque the next day. She got an attorney. She filed stalking charges. She filed an order of protection. She went to Mark's house. They were saying it was an arson investigation. And Peggy is telling them, there is arson because I have a stalker. The stalker is the one who did this. They kept shutting her down. No, ma'am, this is just strictly an arson investigation. And Peggy went as far as looking at footprints around Mark's house and said, if you go to Patrick's house, you will find these boots. These are the boots I bought him for Christmas a few years ago. While Peggy has filed for an order of protection, Patrick has gone and filed for an order of protection against her. He is telling the courts that she's a drug addict, she has erratic behavior, that she's an alcoholic. He's terrified of her, that she is a harm to him and to his young daughter. And while they are in court, the judge says to both of them, I've had enough. You stay away from him and you stay away from her. And they walked out of that courtroom. And Patrick looked at my sister and said, I told you not to fuck with me.
Eventually, Peggy's pleas were taken more seriously, and Patrick was arrested as a result of stalking charges. However, he didn't remain in jail long at all while the trial preparation commenced.
Peggy was able to get a protective order. I think he was in jail for one night and his friend bailed him out. The trial was to happen in September. It was pushed back again to October, and then it was pushed all the way into January. Peggy basically is a sitting duck until this trial happens. Peggy and Mark decide it's best to get her out of the city of Albuquerque, at least until the trial. Mark and Peggy move her into a townhome out in Turlock, California. Undisclosed address. Shortly after that, some very interesting things started happening. Patrick started working with a private investigator. Patrick began posing as a private investigator. Patrick had found out Peggy's moving company, called the moving company and said, "I am Officer Galuli and I have recovered some of Miss Klinky's stolen goods. I would like her most current address." By the grace of God, the woman that was working the desk that day said, "I'm sorry, officer, I can't give you any of our clients' information, but if you bring those things into our office, we can get them to her." And he said, "Never mind." So this girl thought that was odd if a police officer says, "Never mind," and decides to keep this woman's things. So she called Peggy and Peggy said, "I've never had anything that's been stolen. That's my stalker, Patrick Kennedy." Peggy introduced herself to her neighbors in the area, had shown a picture of Patrick to them saying, "If you ever see this man in the area, call police. I have a stalker." He actually got a hold of one of Peggy's coworkers, again said, "I've never heard the name Peggy Klinky. I have no idea who you're talking about." The minute they hung up, she turned around and called Peggy and said, "I just had some weird phone call. Some guy's looking for you." And Peggy said, "It's my stalker. His name is Patrick Kennedy." That's what Peggy was dealing with while she was out in Turlock. Back in Ohio, I had packed up my girls and gone home for Thanksgiving. We had arrived a day or two ahead of time. We always went to my mother's house. About 10 o'clock at night, the phone rings. I pick up the phone and it's Patrick. He says, "I know where she's at and she'll be dead in 2 minutes. My first thought is he's standing in my mother's wooded backyard and he's going to open fire and kill who's ever in my mother's house. My second thought is he knows Peggy is back in Albuquerque. She had flown back in to spend the holidays with Mark. So I pretend I don't know who Patrick is on the phone. I play dumb. I hang up. I call Albuquerque Police Department. I dispatch them to Mark's address. I need to stay on the line because I need to know that my sister's alive. The police show up at Mark's house and Peggy has no idea what's going on. Why are police here? Is my mother dead? And that was something that we always thought is if he can't find Peggy, he's going to come and kill my mother to get Peggy to come out of hiding. And then he would kill her. I had to tell her, "We're fine. I have no idea where this call came from." Peggy said, "File a police report and I want you to call a district attorney who's handling this case." So we file a police report for the death threat phone call. I call the district attorney and Peggy said to me, "He's not going to answer his phone. Just leave him a message." So I called, I said who I was, that I was Peggy's sister. We had received this death threat phone call, that I had dispatched Albuquerque police to make sure my sister was safe. Well, he never called me back, but the following day, Peggy called him. And when the district attorney finally answered his phone and heard Peggy's voice, he started laughing at her and said, "You're still alive?" It was one big joke for him. 2 weeks after Thanksgiving, a box of photos arrives at my mother's house. It is all the photos that Peggy had left behind when she moved out of the home that her and Patrick had shared. All the photos were put into a Ziploc bag. Patrick had poured water in them and then sealed the bag and put it in this box. He mailed it to my mother. The return address was Mark's address in Albuquerque, but the postmark was San Jose, California. Seeing that postmark from San Jose, California meant that he was getting a lot closer to finding her. We took photos of it. We filed a police report. When we talk about stalking behaviors, it's often non-criminal activity. It is not a crime to mail somebody a box of photos. This is just one more incident in building this case. She came home probably the week or two after we received those photos for Christmas. She was not the sister I grew up with. When I talked about her being a beautiful soul and her smile would light up a room and her stunning beauty, it's like her life was snuffed out. She was very on edge, very hypervigilant. I know she was afraid to be with us because her presence put all of us in harm's way. She was afraid to be with her nieces. I remember having to tell my girls, if you ever see him anywhere, you need to run. Do not get in a car with him. Do not walk down the street with him. I really had no idea what this man was capable of doing, but I was terrified of him. I hugged Peggy goodbye. We were standing on my front porch. She was crying. I said, look, we only have a couple weeks left until this trial. Get back to California. Get back to work. Nose to the grindstone. Get your belongings. Get into Albuquerque and get through this trial. She went back to California on Saturday, January 18th. I was taking my young girls to my mother's house to celebrate my niece's 6th birthday. I had called Peggy. She didn't pick up. When I got to my mother's house, she said she had called Peggy and left her a message. But we're like, well, it's Saturday. She's probably doing a million things. We went about our day in Ohio. I had put my girls to bed. My mom and I were watching TV, and the doorbell rang, which in my mother's neighborhood is very odd because people walk in and out of each other's homes all the time, just announcing themselves. And I can remember getting up, walking through the kitchen and looking down the long hallway, literally thinking, I bet you it's Patrick standing there with a gun. I saw two Poland police officers and I knew that was not good. I opened up the door and all I said to them was, did Patrick Kennedy kill my sister? And that's what we found out that night. The officers from Poland talked to my mother. I called our good neighbor down to sit with my mother while I made some phone calls. The officer gave me a name and a number out in Turlock of an officer, and I called Officer Tony Silva, who was wonderful. All he could tell me was this guy, Patrick Kennedy, had found my sister and killed her. I knew there had to be much, much more to that story. Over the days that transpired as we're planning Peggy's funeral and trying to figure out how to get her body back to Ohio, I start talking to people and learning that he had done this before to his ex-wife. When she filed for divorce and threw him out of the house, there were multiple police reports sitting in the city of Albuquerque Police Department. He had gone over to her home and cut all the glass on her home and her car with a glass cutter. He had spilled red oil-based paint all over her property. So this was not the first time he had done this to a woman he was in a relationship with. Peggy met Patrick in 98. Those police reports were actually written sometime in the mid-90s.
So within a few years of what's happening.
Correct. Piecing this story together, Patrick had made several trips from Albuquerque to San Jose, that he was carrying firearms with him, that he had duct tape and rope and fake business cards. He was posing as a private investigator. He was casing different areas and different neighborhoods, but he hit the jackpot when he ran into a UPS driver. And because my sister was in pharmaceutical sales, the driver was familiar with who Peggy was and where she lived. Patrick said, I'm a private investigator. I just need to collect a check for my client from this lady. If you could just give me her exact address. The UPS driver caved and gave Patrick Peggy's address. So on Saturday morning, January 18th of 2003, Peggy was getting ready to do laundry and opened up her garage. Patrick was hiding in the garage with a gun, with duct tape. He beat her over the head and slammed her up against her kitchen wall and tied her hands behind her back. He put tape across her mouth so no one was going to hear her scream. Peggy was not only physically, but mentally a strong person and was able to somehow get out of that bind and ran towards her front door where her neighbor was standing there ringing the doorbell because the two of them were going to have coffee together. To this poor woman's shock, my sister ran out that front door covered in blood screaming, my stalker's here, he found me, he's going to kill me. Peggy grabbed her neighbor. They ran to her neighbor's home next door, barricaded themselves upstairs. Peggy was able to call 911, told them exactly who was there. His name was Patrick Kennedy, that he was going to kill her. Her neighbor was hiding in the closet. Patrick broke the sliding glass doors downstairs and came up and found Peggy in the bedroom on the phone. She was told to hang that phone up immediately. Peggy told the 911 dispatcher, "He's here and he's going to kill me," and Peggy hung up the phone. The SWAT team arrived and they were standing outside the bedroom door, and Peggy was pleading with them, "Don't come in here. If you open up that door, he's going to kill me." Peggy said in a very calm manner, "I need you to call my mother in Ohio and tell her I love her. I need you to get a hold of my young niece who's been sick all winter and tell her she'll have a guardian angel watching over her. And then I need you to get a hold of my sister who's pregnant and please tell her to name her baby after me." And as soon as those words were spoken, Patrick pulled the gun, shot Peggy in the back of the head, and then shot himself. The SWAT team ran in. They pulled Peggy out. She died on her front lawn, and Patrick was dead immediately. It's a really interesting time looking back on it because, of course, being the oldest, you're the spokesperson for the family. I'm the one who's gathering all this information. So as people are calling the house or coming in and out of the house, dropping off food, people want to know, but they don't want to know. And it was very cathartic. As I started to tell the story elongated the more I learned and more people I talked to. It had a healing effect on me, as odd as that may sound. I can remember thinking, what could I do with this? I thought back to Light Father, who often said, "Deborah Ann, God gave you a brain, use it." And I heard that looping in my head. I didn't have a plan. I just started talking about this over and over again. My friends were super supportive. My husband was traveling at the time. I had two young girls. I was pregnant. So my friends were stopping over. And so my friend and I were like, we need to reach out to the newspapers and start telling this story, because they're saying it was some guy and some girl, without realizing that this story goes back almost a full year that law enforcement knew about this. There was no social media. Newspaper was a great avenue. Working with them to get the word out about not only what law enforcement did or didn't do, but what a stalking case may look like. We had called a reporter out in Turlock. We had called a reporter in Modesto. We had called a reporter out in Albuquerque and started telling them, this is way more than some guy shooting some girl. This is a stalking case. I birthed my child in July, and that fall, my mother and I were on the road. She would travel with me and watch the baby while I would speak. That was my grief therapy. Going out, meeting people, talking to people, telling my story, because I really felt like this was a way for people to get to know Peggy. This is why I think that really became my therapy. I never saw a therapist. I never went to a therapy group. I never went to a church group. I just spoke. When I do speak, oftentimes I will open up with, "Welcome to my therapy session," because it's truly what it is. I remember in the midst of telling this story and reaching out to people and looking at what other law enforcement agencies were doing, I had the TV on one morning. My oldest was in kindergarten and I was home with a 2 or 3 year old who was obsessed with Nick Jr. And she happened to walk away from the TV and I was like, I want to see something with adults on it for like 10 minutes. I flipped the TV over to the Today Show and I saw this woman talking about a stalking case, a girl that was being followed in her car with a chip that had been put on her card. The woman that was speaking was Tracy Baum. She was the director of the Stalking Resource Center in Washington, D.C. I immediately took down her information. I sent her really, really long, almost train of thought email of everything that was happening, thinking she's going to read it and delete it. No one in D.C. is ever going to answer some girl in Ohio. She called me back the next day. We had a very long conversation about Peggy's case and what did I want to see come of it. The first thing I really thought of is, why isn't law enforcement trained in this? is there money out there that we could use dedicated funding to train police officers to deal with stalking victims? She was like, well, let me do some research and I'll get back to you. A few days later, she called me back and she said, Erin Brockovich is starting a new series called Ordinary Women, Extraordinary Lives. Would you be interested in telling the producers your story? Absolutely. So I shared the story with the producers of that show. And in the midst of creating that segment, they knew this was bigger than just an hour-long show. LMNO Productions and Lifetime Television joined forces with the National Center for Victims of Crime, the Stalking Resource Center, which today is SPARC, the Stalking Prevention Awareness and Resource Center, retired Officer Mark Wynn, and Heather Wilson, who was in the House of Representatives from the state of New Mexico, pulled us all together in July of 2003. We had a congressional briefing. Mark and I were able to tell our stories and share Peggy's stories with Congress. I had a great conversation with Heather Wilson while I was there. She said to me, and I can remember this like it was yesterday, Debbie, we have the laws. What I feel like we're missing is education. And that moment in time was when I realized that's where Peggy's story is going to live. When I went to DC in 2003 and I had that conversation with Heather Wilson about education, it was her idea to propose January to be National Stalking Awareness Month in honor of Peggy because she was killed in January. So January of 2003 was the first National Stalking Awareness Month. 2 years ago, SPARC instituted January 18th as Sparkle Day. Sparkle out against stalking. They had fabulous social media promotion on it, asking people to dress in sparkly clothes or sparkly signs. And that actually came from something that I said very early on about Peggy's sparkling personality and how she kind of lost her sparkle the longer that the stalking and abuse went on. So the theme was to bring the sparkle back. People really embraced it. They posted some fabulous photos on social media and shared them and shared some of the things that SPARC had done. They're on Instagram under Follow Us Legally. I partner with them a lot. If they're doing an educational webinar, they want to share Peggy's story, or if we travel together, they're the best friends I have in the world. They're a wonderful group of people. They have numerous amounts of informations and trainings and podcasts. They established the Peggy Klinke Award that is given to someone in the field who is doing great work in the world of stalking, whether it be advocacy, prevention, training. This coming January will be the third year that they will present that award. Her story is her legacy. More people know Peggy today than when she was alive. I have done numerous podcasts. I've partnered with various TV shows. They have handled Peggy's case in a very respectful way, not over the top, not glamorized it. They have portrayed it word for word, motion for motion, action for action. You have no idea who is sitting in that audience, who may see this show and then identify with that story. I have gotten messages that say, your sister's story saved my life. To hear things like that lets me know that this was all worth it. So for me, it was sharing that trauma over and over again, so people are educated on the crime of stalking. And it wasn't just geared towards law enforcement and the criminal justice system. We also had to gear it towards general public, because the victims can't identify what's happening to them. They're not going to report it. If law enforcement and the criminal justice system is not trained or educated in stalking and behaviors, they're not going to know how to recognize it when working with victims. The thing that came out of this was a 19-minute video geared toward law enforcement trainee, I remember an officer being very resistant about doing something like this. It's going to paint law enforcement in a bad light. Well, we can't change the narrative of the story. In this specific case, yes, we are going to tell the truth of how this case unfolded and learn from mistakes. It's always domestic violence, rape, sexual assault, and stalking. It's always put into a corner. It's last. We do the least amount of conversation around it. We do the least amount of training. We see it in front of our face, yet law enforcement still doesn't use the language or identify the crime. A lot of people still don't think it's a crime. We go back to that. My sister walked into that law enforcement agency. She didn't have a scratch on her. So a lot of these stalking victims have months, if not years, of emotional trauma. They have no physical scars to prove what's been happening to them. Stalking is a really high indicator of homicide. So if it's not in the report, they're never going to make the correlation between the stalking behavior and the homicide. Like in Peggy's case, she wasn't a stalking victim. She was a girl that was shot in her apartment by this guy. And until we started to tell the story, only then did it become a stalking case. I get a lot of questions about, I don't know how to stop this person from stalking their ex. What do I do? What is bystander intervention? Looking at Peggy's case specifically and knowing Patrick's friends and people that saw this evolve did nothing to stop it. If you have a friend that's a victim, they might not come out and say, I'm a stalking victim. You're going to have to read between the lines when you're listening to some of these people, but do the best you can and give the best support that you can. You need to understand there's more to this story. Be understanding, be a great listener, rather than downplaying, because that's what they really want to do in stalking, is downplay the behavior. The more we downplay it, the more the offender escalates the behavior. So you don't want to minimize and you don't want to brush off that behavior. Even if you're witnessing the stalker, you might want to say, that's not the right way to get a girl's interest. Something that I have also learned along the way that I wish Peggy would have had was an advocate. A lot of times people will say, what help can I get? And I always say, I'm the expert of my story. I'm not an expert in this field, but let me connect you with someone who is. For help in the stalking world, court advocates are amazing. They are doing wonderful work. They will guide you through this, sometimes longer than we ever anticipate, legal process of going through the court system, of helping you get an order of protection, of putting a safety plan in place, of guiding you on documenting things on paper, keeping a stalking log. Any law enforcement officer that you talk to, write their name down, their number, their badge number, keeping things on your phone, all the direct messages, comments on posts, texts, voicemails, all of these things are evidence in helping an individual build a stalking case. So although you might want to not listen to that voicemail over and over again, or you don't want to look at that text message, understand that that is evidence that will help you build a stalking case against the offender. For all things stalking awareness, they're not a help center, but Follow Us Legally is SPARC, the Stalking Prevention Awareness and Resource Center. They are a fabulous resource of training tools, webinars, podcasts, graphics, downloadable brochures. If there are people out in the community looking for resources to share within their community, SPARC has an awful lot of downloadable materials that they can use. And I even think they have a connection to a lethality assessment, which is a wonderful tool to go through, look at things clearly, answer things honestly, and then it paints a very clear picture of the lethality of the relationship that you are in. Speaking to grief, everybody's road is different. What works for me will not necessarily work for someone else. I look at everyone in my family and how we have all dealt with this. My mother is very religious. She's very involved in church. She has a wonderful community to fall back on. And I became an advocate. This is something I never thought I would do. I don't like public speaking. I don't like standing up in front of a room. I don't like people looking at me. But this is really where my path of grief took me. This is something that I had to do to heal my heart. So we have to understand that everybody's grief is different. Everybody's milestones are different. Most of my activity is on Instagram, and I can be found under Driddle Design.
I'm so grateful for your time. Thank you so much for sharing everything today.
Thank you so much, Amy. It's been fantastic.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
She reported to the police that when she answered the door at 3 a.m, he was sweaty and anxious. He asked for a blanket, which is a big piece of circumstantial evidence, which she gave him. And off he went looking for my mother. And then showed up to work at 6 a.m., never told a soul that she was missing. My grandfather knew instantly that something was very, very wrong. My mother's been missing for 44 years. There's got to be a different angle, a different mode. And that is what I'm fighting for.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.